Hello, I'm Jackie Daugherty with the Ardenny Research. Today I'm speaking with Rick Whittington, who followed the defense industry on Wall Street for more than 30 years. Today we're asking him to take a stab at predicting what defense spending will look like under the leadership of President Trump and Defense Secretary Mattis. Before we start, please see the hedge clause on our website. In brief, your Ardenny Research does not recommend individual securities. All views expressed by our guests, especially on stocks, are solely their own, without any explicit or implied endorsements by your Ardenny Research. Let's begin. So, Rick, now that things are changing dramatically in Washington, we wanted to know what you think of General Mattis and what you think his priorities will be as the head of the Defense Department.
Yes. From all indications, General Mattis is a cerebral military officer who is very attuned to international and foreign relations and allied politics. He's made it clear well before his appointment to the Defense Department under President Trump that he would like to see the U.S. Shore up allied relations and at the same time present a more forward positioning of its forces relative to prospective adversaries, and I think he means China and Russia in particular. He'd like to modernize the existing force, improve its technologic capability, and also moderately increase the size of the force structure.
And so is there a specific arm or branch of the services that you'll think he'll be spending more on?
He has singled out the Navy because of its ability to, steam the oceans of the world and position itself off the coast of prospective adversaries in the Pacific Ocean and China's actions in the South China Sea over the past few years, building up its island fortifications in disputed waters, come to mind. So I would expect an emphasis, and President Trump has certainly echoed this, on a larger Navy, but also I think forward positioning ground forces, Army as well as Marine forces off the periphery of Russia in the Baltics, other Eastern European nations, and possibly in Southeast Asia, although thus far I haven't seen anything specific on that latter score.
And do you think that he and Trump have similar priorities in this regard?
It sounds as if they are, singing from the same, sheet of music. Certainly in the campaign and even in his first weeks in office, President Trump has rankled, the feathers of the sensibilities, perhaps a better term, of some key American allies. And in order to placate those concerns, he has sent General Mattis to Asia to see the leaders of South Korea and also Japan, but also to Western Europe, Eastern Europe, to see the NATO and the EU leadership. And in that regard, the feedback has been positive from those foreign political figures.
And so far, President Trump has sort of talked about increasing defense spending by about $54 billion. Do you think that kind of large jump will get approved?
I do think it's going to sail through, frankly. I believe there's a consensus in the Republican Party, which controls both houses narrowly, but nonetheless controls both houses of Congress now, to increase, funding, for U.S. military forces through to the Defense Department, and also to adopt a somewhat more aggressive, I would say traditional foreign policy posture, utilizing, the armed forces as part of that.
And how do they manage to get through sort of budget constraints like sequestration that are in effect right now?
Well, the sequestration, is an outgrowth of a divided, political landscape in Washington, where the Republicans have held both houses of Congress the last 4 years, and the Democrats, President Obama, in the White House. Now we have the Republicans in all three branches, and I believe that when the fiscal 2018 Budget Act is passed this year, I would expect by the summer that sequestration will be removed.
And so does that mean that, do you think that'll impact future years? Do you think they'll continue to increase the spending on defense budget going out 2, 3, 4 years?
I think the new administration intends to increase spending beyond fiscal 2018 for the Defense Department, and I'm expecting mid-single-digit, maybe even high single-digit, possibly double-digit increases again in fiscal 2019. And beyond that, in fiscal 20 through 22, which would be the last years of the Trump 4-year term, I would expect the spending growth to taper off. But in order to get the Navy back towards the numbers, the low 300 range, even perhaps 350, combatants, surface and submarine combatants, and also to increase the fighter wings of the Air Force and increase the size of the Army and the Marine Corps, it's going to necessitate more than just the 10% that's been talked about for the current year.
Double digits would be a major increase. Now, defense stocks, this certainly isn't a surprise to defense stocks. I mean, they've had a major rally since Trump was elected, even just prior to his election. So do you think they've run and already reflect all of this good news, or is there more to go?
Certainly some of the speculation, fueled by Trump's election has filtered into the stocks, but we haven't seen a budget yet. The first one, will be proposed here in the weeks ahead, and I expect that to go through without any difficulty. And secondly, the monies to the contractors have not, the incremental funds to the contractors from the Department of Defense won't even begin to filter out for another year to a year and a half from the time that budget is enacted. So I think in that period of time, the defense stocks are going to sparkle. Their backlogs will begin to rise. This starting in the March and June quarters of 2018, and this first budget will force those backlogs higher all through calendar 18 and into early 2019. And the stocks typically perform on that basis. And don't forget that over the past 8 years, the average U.S. defense contractors' revenues from the U.S. Military have gone flat. The companies have succeeded in improving their earnings primarily through margin gains, which have been concerted and sizable. Share buybacks have played a part, but that's because the profitability of the companies has been improving. As the top lines, as the revenues of these companies begin to expand later in 2018-2019, further margin gains, I think, can be expected on the leaned-out corporate structures that these that the leading defense contractors have achieved. And I don't think investors are ready yet for the acceleration in earnings, reported earnings that are going to flow as a consequence. And the last, element to be factored in is whether indeed the proposed tax changes of the Trump administration will be carried through. If they are, most of these, in fact, all the leading defense contractors are paying close to the statutory 35% rate right now. Their tax bills are due to diminish, and that could further improve the earnings flow.
Well, let's talk about margins for a second, because Trump definitely made a point to you know, try and search for bargains via tweets. Do you think that the defense contractors will be able to, you obviously think they'll be able to maintain or increase their margins. Why is that given what, you know, Trump did to, I guess it was Boeing and Lockheed?
And I think you have to realize that being a builder, the president, and having been involved in construction projects for a number of years, the president understands and I think will factor into, you know, into the way he approaches, you know, the funding of the contractors, that if you can provide a company with some visibility for several years, that improves that company's, you know, wherewithal to be able to translate revenues into profitability. So I think the trade-off here is he can get, he can wheedle and cajole some reduced unit costs in various items. You know, the F-35 has been visibly mentioned, but also, you know, the aircraft carriers, you know, were brought up last week when President Trump visited the Huntington Ingalls, you know, Virginia facility. So if you can provide multi-year funding for big weapons platforms, the unit costs can come down, but the companies can plan ahead on a more rational basis than they've been able to in many decades, and increase the profitability on even on those reduced unit costs. Don't forget, you know, budget politics have been very topsy-turvy, really, you know, since the end of, I would say, the end of the Vietnam War. So extending back into the 70s, we've seen a whole succession of defense budgets rise a year or two and then get cut back. We've seen a big ticket, visible weapons platforms proposed, funded for a couple of years, and then curtailed or scaled back. So it's really been a nightmare for the contractors for a very long time. If they can get some visibility, you know, into what's going to be produced and in what quantity, that'll make their lives a lot easier. And I think they can improve their profitability, you know, within that context.
And so give us a rundown. Do you think that revenues will increase by, let's say, how much for this industry?
Yeah, I think a baseline right now would be 7 to 8% compound annual revenue growth for the next 5 years. And on that, I think margins, if they expand modestly, you know, we could be looking at mid-teens, 15, 16, 17% earnings growth on, you know, for that five-year period per year.
And does that factor in the tax cut?
Depending on where the you know, where the budget you know, singles out you know, increases in unit production, I think it does. Yes. So I think the areas that Trump's really going to go after will be shipbuilding and aircraft production, tactical fighter aircraft production. And that's where the units are most visible. You know, ships are very expensive items. You know, aircraft carriers are now up in the $15 billion range. It takes about 7 years to build an aircraft carrier. If you can give a shipyard some visibility that you might pull in or accelerate, I should say, the production of a carrier or start a new one in the place of one that's perhaps a third or halfway through the production process, that allows the shipyard to operate much more efficiently. So unit costs can come down on each carrier, but the profit margin could actually go up for the contractor. You know, and that'd be a win-win both for the country as well, you know, as private industry. And I think the same thing holds true for, you know, aircraft like the F-35 or possibly an alternative, the F-18 from Boeing, which has, you know, been bandied as a possible, you know, alternate. Regardless of how Mattis and the defense people decide on which particular item of the equipment, there's going to be a lot of business to go around. in order to rebuild, fighter aircraft strength for the Air Force, for the Navy, for the Marine Corps, and also ships for the Navy. We just can't overestimate how contracted the U.S. Armed Forces is today relative to 25, 30 years ago, which was the era of the peace, of the so-called peace dividend after the end of the Cold War, much less if we go back, into the teeth of the Cold War back in the 1950s, early 1960s. The U.S. military was roughly double, even triple the size that it is today, and that's in a country that had, something like two-thirds to fewer citizens. So, yes, the defense budget's large. It's a consequential element of the total federal budget, but I believe it's only 14% of total federal spending. If we went back, to World War II, the defense budget was basically 60% of total federal spending, just to try to put it into, I think, a context that you don't often see.
It was 60% of federal spending. When was that?
Back in the Second War, back in the 1940s.
Oh, okay.
Now, since then, the whole landscape of federal, of national government has changed, and we have programs that didn't exist back then. And everything I've seen is that the new administration is going to retain full funding for the non-discretionary areas like Social Security, Medicare, and not touch that at all. I think where the battle lines are being drawn are some of the other agencies of government, which collectively are about the same size now as the Department of Defense. When I worked back in Washington back in the latter part of the 1970s, defense spending was 50% more, or 50% greater as a percent of the total federal budget than it is today. So there's room for Department of Defense spending to rise here without, crippling or skewing total federal spending excessively.
So do me a favor, and does that 15 to 17% EPS growth, you're seeing that for how many years?
For the next 5 years. So the five-year budget plan that's going to be submitted, which is the way they do it, propose a number for fiscal 2018, but will at the same time have tentative funding for 2019, 20, 21, and 22. So Trump's only going to be in office for another 3 years and 11 months. You certainly can't count on him being reelected in 2020. So, for analytic purposes and trying to assess, the prospects of defense companies, you have to look at the first budget that comes out this year and its implications for the next 4 years. So even if you put in a completely new administration in 2021, they could not really affect Trump policies until 2022. So between now and the end of 2021 is the period of time in which this new budget will be in effect. And I'm expecting, stronger spending, increased spending, each of the next, 4 years.
And does the 15 to 17% incorporate the expected reduction in corporate taxes down to, 15 or 20%?
Well, I'm assuming 18%, for modeling purposes right now. And based on everything, sounds plausible. And like his defense spending plans, The tax reform seems to be high on the priority list, and again, there seems to be a lot of support in the on Capitol Hill for it as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm expecting tax reform to go through by the middle part of the year, and I would anticipate it'll be retroactive to the start of 2017.
Do you have, let's say, three favorite names within the industry?
The three, sitting down and doing the calculations, not knowing exactly what the budget is at this point, the stocks that I think are most attractive, the first would be Orbital Sciences, which is heavily involved in spacecraft, satellites, rocket propulsions, systems, missiles, and other high-tech armaments. That'd be my number one pick. My second would be Huntington Ingalls, the shipbuilder, and that's all they do is ships for the Navy, also for the Coast Guard. They do some commercial shipping, but they also have a large repair and overhaul operation, and it sounds as if there's going to be a lot of money to get the ships that we do have, the naval vessels that we already have out and steaming, as opposed to in being stuck in the port as much as they have been these last 7 or 8 years. And my third pick from a prospective return basis is General Dynamics, which is also involved in shipping, but they have three other major divisions, and one is land combat equipment, tanks, and other surface warfare vehicles, and then they have a business jet, non-military business, which is on a roll, Gulfstream. So those would be my three total return candidates. Based on the numbers that I'm forecasting, I could see Orbital Sciences better increasing about 250% over the next 4 years. I could see Huntington Ingalls increasing about 170% from its current value, and General Dynamics about 140% as well. So I think there's a lot of upside in these stocks.
And is that primarily, are you signaling them out primarily because you expect they're going to be among the bigger beneficiaries of the spending going forward?
I do, yes. And yeah. And because shipbuilding has been basically the poor stepchild of military spending for the past 30 years, the incremental benefit to the ship builders is the greatest. And Orbital Sciences is, and that explains the focus on Huntington Ingalls and General Dynamics. But land combat vehicles has been expended, for the past 30 years since the end of the Cold War, and the last area is Orbital Sciences for munitions, high impact, high tech munitions, as opposed to the sort that had been utilized in these counterinsurgency wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. I think the focus of Mattis and the national security community has turned now to China and Russia, as opposed to Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. And so, if you had to think about, what could be wrong with your sort of bullish view of the world, what could go wrong in the next couple of years?
Well, it's really hard to see, quite honestly. I think a sea change politically has taken place in Washington, for good or for bad, and they have shifted priorities. So, I think the defense buildup is pretty much set in stone right now. Look, it's going to remain politically contentious because of budgetary politics and concern about how health care is resolved and also how the fruits of you know, what tax dollars are out there are distributed. But within the Republican Party ranks, you know, which is the party that does control Washington right now, I think there's a strong consensus to rebuild the armed forces, and these contractors are the distinct beneficiaries of that.
And you think that there's a willingness to spend on defense even if it results in increased deficits?
I think that's the way it's going to work for the next 12 months. The economy seems to be, you know, it is getting better. You look at the forward indicators, whether it's, you know, the ISMs or durable goods orders, economic statistics are getting better. And private companies, as they reported the December, you know, financial results and have been more upbeat about current business conditions. So as long as the economy is improving, I think there is a consensus to spend on defense. If something happens and the economy decelerates sharply and goes into the doldrums, then I think thinking will change again, and there will probably be an overhaul on these proposals that are going in right now.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like defense spending will occur before it gets the spending on infrastructure occurs.
Defense is infrastructure. Don't forget, you know, all these companies produce the preponderance of their product. They generate the vast bulk of their revenues in the United States and through the employ of U.S. workers. So if you start speeding up and enhancing the funding, you know, in the shipping, in the shipbuilding industry and in the aircraft industry, it's going to have a direct impact on on wage earners, on the purchase of SUVs and pickup trucks. So I think there's a trickle down effect here that some people in the administration, Secretary Ross, for example, have already highlighted that could stimulate the economy even beyond what we've seen thus far. And remember, the defense budget that's going to come forth here in the next several weeks, that'll be tested in Congress and shifted around in the congressional committees. When it actually begins to take effect on September 1 of this year for fiscal year 2018, those monies won't reach the U.S. economy really until calendar 2018, early 2019. So that if the economy is doing well now, the stimulus of defense is out another year and a half to further accentuate the current growth. And I think that's something that the stock market, that many investors might be underestimating right now.
Yeah, definitely. President Trump had talked about doing in order to pay for the increase in defense spending was to decrease spending at the State Department. Do you think that actually gets put through, those cuts at the State Department?
I'm guessing that plan doesn't fly. I'm guessing that General Mattis and Mr. Tillerson are going to be working hand in glove to sustain Department of State funding. All the words of General Mattis that I've seen tell me that he'll push back on that, and that trial balloon will puncture. So I don't think state funding, State Department funding is going to be impaired, or at least nowhere near as significantly as was initially talked about.
All right. Well, Rick, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much, and hopefully you'll let us call you back after the budget comes out.
Well, thank you, Jackie. It was my pleasure.